Space Cowboy Books presents Simultaneous Times, a science and speculative fiction podcast. Short stories to stir the imagination by contemporary authors.
Stars by Liam Hogan, with music by Fog Machine, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. They fall from the sky and I must catch them. I'm stepping off an Indonesian trawler, still tingling from the afterglow, when I feel the distant call. Somewhere in the northern hemisphere, Canada, perhaps. The journey begins by mail van, ferry, and by foot. At the airport, I'm disoriented by the noise and chaos. "How do I get to Canada?" I ask. "You'll need to go via Singapore," the girl behind the desk says. "Where in Canada?" By now, the location of the fall should be on the tip of my tongue, but it isn't. "I'm sorry," I fluster. "I'm not sure. Anywhere, I guess." She looks over my shoulder to the queue of less difficult passengers. "Take a seat," she gestures. "I'm busy right now, but I'll see what I can do." On the metal bench, I hold my head in calloused hands. The departure board shows mainly local destinations: Jakarta, Banda Aceh, Padang. Nothing resonates. My path is murky and confused. There's a touch on my arm, the girl from the information desk, holding a coffee and something even more welcome, a boarding card. "I shouldn't be doing this, but you looked lost. I've got you on a training flight as far as Frankfurt." I thank her profusely as she taps her watch. "It's leaving now. Otherwise, I'd love to hear your story. Will you look me up when you come back this way?" I tell her that if I can, I will. And I mean it, though I'm weary. People misinterpret the warm glow that lingers after a catch. Expect more from me than I can give. Lulled by the rumble of jet engines, I dream of ripening maize, blue-tinged mountains on the horizon. But still, no name comes. Have I been complacent? Is this a test of my faith? In Frankfurt, I thumb a tatty stack of foreign notes, wondering how far they'll get me. "Welcome back, Mr. Fletcher," the guy working the ticket desk says with an easy smile. It's not my name. It's not even the name on the passport I handed him, and can only have been summoned by a computer glitch or data error. But as usual, I go with the flow. Mr. Fletcher is a regular traveler between Frankfurt and Calgary, and has enough air miles to pay for an economy flight home. But not the airport taxes. I'm directed to the Bureau de Change, where my wages from 2 months on a fishing trawler barely cover the departure fees. Though I'm on my way, I'm feeling rushed, agitated. As I tuck my canvas bag between my feet, the Canadian across the aisle asks if this is my first flight. I laugh and say no, and he smiles and says he still gets nervous as well. Tells me he's a farmer, and when I ask what he grows, he says maize. Finally, I begin to relax. I sit in the cab of the farmer's pickup, trying not to fidget. Ever since he drove away from the airport long stay, we've been headed in the wrong direction. Did I read too much into the easy conversation we had as the plane was coming in to land? Should I put my trust in the chance arrangement of airline seats? Intersection after intersection pass us by, each a Doppler shift from hope to disappointment, until finally I crack and ask if he's going the right way. He pulls over and, with the indicator ticking, reaches across and pushes the passenger door open. "I'm headed east," he says. I don't know where you're heading, and I thought you didn't either. But you're welcome to find your own path. The first two cars are Calgary-bound, and I wave them into the thickening dust, feeling the time slip away. It's over an hour of listening to my heart beat too fast, before a truck with a farm feed logo stops. The driver takes in my rough clothes, sturdy boots, and tattered bag and asks, "Looking for work, son?" I nod, uncertain, and he bangs twice on the panel behind. The tailgate swings down, and a brace of strong arms haul me up. It's dank and dark, and the air is thick with tobacco and sweat. My hands twitch and flutter. I can feel the call, insistent, painfully so. When the truck grinds to a halt, I bolt into the night, laughter echoing as someone calls out, "Don't piss on the corn." I plunge through the tall plants, knowing I'm too late. Will I find it lying on the dirt, soiled, damaged, the light bleeding away? Bursting into the crop circle, I stop, astounded. A girl stands in my place. I feel a tide of resentment, anger, and fear. For a moment, I wonder if I can force from her what is rightfully mine. Then the envy slips away as she returns to me with arms spread wide and smiles the smile of a fresh catch, and I'm bathed in her glow. Afterwards, as we lie in the moonlight, listening to the wind whisper through the maize, I realize I don't know her name. "Stella," she says, her naked belly rippling with laughter beneath my head. "That's what my father called me, Stella." She returns a year later, just as the corn is ready to be harvested again, dropping off her child, our child. With an impatient wave, she tells me she's overdue in Wisconsin. As she steps to the side of the road, a haulage truck pulls up, and she gets in without a backwards glance. I've settled here, doing a bit of this, a bit of that, but raising Oscar, mainly. He's 4 now and loves to hike. I have to carry him partway, otherwise we'd not get far. But he's always impatient to stomp the trails on his own. I think he likes it best when we set up tent, and as the fire dies down, he can stare into the vastness of the night sky. Up here, miles from the blaze of the nearest city, far away from the brightly lit ribbons of the roads, away from other campers, away from everyone, the stars are undimmed. The Milky Way carves the heavens in two, an uncounted and uncountable blizzard of frozen diamonds. I don't feel their pull anymore, but every so often I catch his eyes tracking something he can't possibly see. And then I know that this is borrowed time, that as soon as his legs are strong enough, he'll be off. True Love by Jeff Habiger, with music by Red Blue Black Silver, read by Jean-Paul Garnier. The man slid into the seat at the bar, head down, his sorrow rolling off him like a fog obscuring the sunrise. "You don't look like a person who's just come back from the trip of a lifetime," I said. "I meet all sorts of people in here, from every background, every profession. My bar is located right outside the exit terminal for the Time Port, a convenient place for time travelers to stop and readjust after their travels to who knew when or where. A way to ease back into the dull monotony of their lives. Most of them still showed the euphoric high from the trip of a lifetime when they walked in, trying to hold on to the experience for a little bit longer before reality slapped them in the face. But not this man. I set a glass of water down in front of him. Time travel had a way of really dehydrating people. "First one is on the house," I said. It took him a long time to notice the glass. Then he picked it up, mechanically, and drained half the glass in one long pull. "Thanks," he mumbled. "No problem," I said. "You didn't take one of those extreme time trips, did you?" "Huh?" He looked up at me. "You know, a trip that takes you to one of the most dangerous moments in history, to experience the terror and thrill of the moment. Like the eruption of Mount Vesuvius, or the dropping of the atom bomb on Hiroshima." I gave him a hard look and pointed to the door. "You didn't go back to 2020, did you? Because if you did, you can leave right now. I don't need to be spending hours scrubbing this place down. Decontamination techniques aren't worth a shot of spit." The man flinched. "2020? What? No. I went back to the Jurassic. It was a safari trip to the Morrison." "Dinosaurs? Then why the long face? A dinosaur safari has got to be one of the top 10 time travel destinations. Everybody always raves about them. Better than going to Disney World on Mars." The man sighed and took another drink, setting down the empty glass. "Can you replace that with a beer?" "Sure," I said, walking over to the tap. "I've got a Gordon's IPA that you'll love." The man nodded. I filled a pint glass, then set it down in front of him. "So, did a T-Rex eat one of the travelers?" "T-Rex lived in the late Cretaceous," he corrected me. "I went to the Jurassic. You know, Allosaurus, Stegosaurus, Diplodocus." I didn't know, but I nodded to keep him talking. And there was no sound of thunder moment. Nobody got eaten, and it wasn't a hunting trip. "Sounds like a fun trip. Still doesn't explain why you look like somebody pissed in your cornflakes." The man took a drink of the beer and made a rueful smile. I fell in love. My mouth opened and I shook my head. "Look, falling in love is supposed to be a happy thing, unless your name happens to be Romeo and hers was Juliet." "It was a happy thing," he said. "We met at the lodge the first night, and it was as if fireworks went off." "Love at first sight, huh?" "Yep. You never think it will happen to you until, wham, you find Cupid's arrow sticking out of your chest." Amari was perfect in every way. He pulled out his phone and opened an app. In a moment, the phone's projector was displaying a picture of the man and a beautiful woman, Amari, on a safari tram. Long-necked dinosaurs in the background. They were smiling, arms wrapped around their shoulders, the image of a perfect couple. She had fallen in love with dinosaurs at an early age, just like me. "And this safari was a gift to herself," he said, flipping through the images. "Most people coming back from a dinosaur safari only have pictures of dinosaurs, like they are the first to have ever seen one in the flesh. This man had some of those, but nearly every picture had Amari in it too, smiling, laughing, joking, kissing, and having the time of their lives." He stopped on an image of Amari blowing a kiss, though I could see that she appeared to be on the verge of tears. The man closed the app and set his phone down. "So, what's the matter?" I asked. "It looked like you two hit it off pretty well. Almost like you were perfect for each other. Did she have a boyfriend, or was she already married?" "Nope, nothing like that." He picked up the beer and drained the glass, setting it down carefully. "Today's her birthday." Again, I was confused. "So, seems like a time for celebration, not sadness." "She told me it was her birthday this morning, before the return trip. She had saved up for years for the trip, a present to herself for her 30th birthday. A magical trip for a magical milestone," she had said. "Did you have a fight after that?" I asked. I made a show of looking around to see if anybody else had come in with him. Why isn't she with you if you hit it off so well? She had to return home, to her time. Time travel, he gave an ironic chuckle. Her time, 30 years in the future. He looked at me, sadness filling his eyes. Today is her birthday, the day she's being born. He gestured toward the door. Somewhere out there, Amari's parents are in a hospital. Her mother is in labor, about to give birth to the woman I fell in love with 150 million years ago. Oh, I shook my head. I had heard many tales from time travelers that had stopped in my bar, but this one had to be one of the saddest. Hell, even Hollywood had never thought to contrive such a tale of romance and sadness, and they loved to milk all the emotion they could from a story. Isn't there something you can do? I asked. What, go introduce myself to her parents on the day she's born and tell them I fell in love with their daughter? Can't you take another trip? Travel to the future? He shook his head. The law won't allow it. He was referring to the Temporal Interference Maintenance and Enforcement Act. The law when it came to all things time travel. Really? I thought it was to prevent you from going back and killing Hitler or your own grandfather, I said. Apparently, there's a little known part of the act that prevents any person from traveling to any part of their history, past or future. Future history? Sounds like a science fiction novel. This is reality. They can't keep you from traveling to the future, can they? Apparently they can. They can prevent you from traveling to any point that involves your direct or indirect history, at any point along your timeline. So you're saying they know when you will die? The man shrugged. It's time travel. They probably know everything that ever has or will happen. The good news is that I'm still alive 30 years from now. He gave another ironic chuckle. You already asked them if you could travel to the future? He nodded. Yep, the moment I got out of the portal. But they couldn't tell me that I was still alive, only that I was prohibited from traveling there. Same difference, I said. So can't you do something else? Plan another trip to the past to meet up with her? Then, I don't know. Run away to some long forgotten past so we can live out our lives, like in the movies? Constantly looking over our shoulders for the time police? He shook his head. That's not how I want to live. Plus, it took each of us years to even afford this one trip. And it's not like I can coordinate things with her. He hung his head, holding the empty beer glass between his fingers. True love is such a lie. I don't know why I was so angry about something that had happened to a man I had just met. Maybe it was the way the impersonal bureaucracy of time travel was completely ignoring the human factor. Or maybe I was just a sentimental barkeeper at heart. I liked a good romance as well as the next person. True love is not a lie, I said. The man gave me a sympathetic look, clearly thinking I had lost it. Did I mention that I've met all kinds of people coming through my bar? I smiled at the man. One word you need to remember that will solve everything. He gave me a quizzical look. Cryogenics. In this episode of Simultaneous Times, you heard Stars by Liam Hogan, with music by Fog Machine, and True Love by Jeff Habiger, with music by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Theme music by Dane Luscombe. Thank you for listening to Simultaneous Times Podcast. This month, we have a special announcement. On June 18th, Simultaneous Times, Volume 2, paperback science fiction anthology will be released. You can find it at our online store at bookshop.org/shop/spacecowboybooks. And get in touch with us on Instagram and Twitter. We'd love to know what you think of the show.